All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm speaking to you from New York City on this, the 26th of February, 2019. Always like to remind you, I write a newsletter called Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks. And you can subscribe to that by going to miningstocks.com, miningstocks.com. I'd like to encourage you to consider subscribing to Chen Lin's letter. It's really its focus largely on biotechs, but also on some energy stocks and some gold and silver mining shares as well. I'll be meeting up with Chen actually at the PDAC conference in Toronto this weekend and perhaps pass along some of his ideas to you next week. Do want to thank each of you for listening to the show, making it one of the more popular shows on the Voice America Business Channel. Also, encourage you to continue sending along your comments and whatever comments you have to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. Do want to thank our sponsors for making this show economically viable. This week's sponsors are RN Resources, Novo Resources, Triumph Gold, Gold Mining Inc., Great Bear Resources, Uranium Energy, and Miramont Resources. I've titled today's show, Two Phenomenal Gold Deposits You Need to Own. Dr. Quentin Henning and Chris Taylor will be with me, as will Michael Oliver, all return guests this week. Two of the most exciting new gold discoveries to come along in years, if not decades, will be discussed today. After our first commercial break, I will be talking to Chris Taylor, President and CEO of Great Bear Resources. Great Bear has discovered a gold deposit on the, it's called the Dixie Project in the Red Lake District of Ontario. What makes this story so exciting is not only the phenomenal high-grade gold drill results that have been reported, but the fact that the deposits have all the geological, that the geology of this project is, has all the geological earmarks of the great Red Lake gold deposit that was the company-making deposit for Goldcorp. I believe the Dixie deposit may have the same potential for this very tiny company, Great Bear Resources. It still only has 36.3 million shares outstanding, leaving it with a relatively low market cap. Then during the last segment of today's show, I'll be talking to Dr. Quentin Henning, who's been on the show many times in the past. He is the chairman and president of Novo Resources. The greatest gold deposit in the history of humankind has been the Great Witwatersrand Rand deposit in South Africa. From that conglomerate deposit, something like 40% of all the gold ever mined in the history of humankind has come. It come from that relatively small area known as the Witwatersrand area of South Africa. Naturally, many have wondered if there could be another such deposit somewhere on the face of the earth. And when Dr. Henning had worked in the past for Newmont Mining, he was given the resources to scour the globe in search for the next Witwatersrand deposit, should it exist. During the down cycles, of course, major mining companies cut exploration expenditures in quest of meeting quarterly earnings targets. And so after leaving Newmont, Dr. Henning went to work with various junior mining companies, but always retained what he learned in his head and always retained his the information that he gathered in a constant search for the next Witwatersrand gold deposit. Now, over the years, he realized that the conventional wisdom about how so much gold was accumulated in the Witwatersrand just simply didn't make sense. The theories didn't add up to how there could be so much gold in one small area, relatively small area. So he came up with his own theories about how the Witwatersrand was formed. Specifically, Dr. Henning came up with the theory that the gold was deposited at the Witwatersrand around 2.7 billion years ago as photosynthesis began to take place on the Earth. The presence of oxygen began to change the chemistry of the ocean such that an ocean very pregnant with lots of gold and other minerals, but gold in this case, started to precipitate out and be absorbed on the early plant life at the bottom of a shallow sea. So given this theory, Henning surmised that what he needed to look for were rocks of 2.7 billion years of age in a large ancient shallow seabed. It was that theory that took him to the Pilbara Craton in Western Australia. While there are notable differences now between what Novo Resources has discovered, the gold deposit there in northwestern Australia, with the Witwatersrand, there are also many similarities with the Wits discovery. Most importantly, what he has discovered is an enormous gold system in Australia that stretches for hundreds of square kilometers. Now, one of the major differences between the gold at Witwatersrand and in the conglomerate rocks in Australia is that the Australian gold mineralization is much more coarse, which represents or presents a sampling challenge, a very, very significant sampling challenge. But Henning's Novo Resources is applying new technologies to overcome those challenges. Quinton is very optimistic about the company in 2019, so I hope that you'll stick around to listen to his remarks in the last segment of today's show. But right now, I'm pleased to tell you that Michael Oliver is with us once again to help us ferret out the markets now and where they're going in the short term. We have to take a lot of time to follow companies that are discovering gold deposits, but we also want to keep our eyes on what's going on day to day in the markets, and Michael is always, well, thankfully, he's almost always here to help us ferret that out. Thanks for joining me again, Michael.
Hi, Jay. Good to be back.
Good to be back, and it's always good to tell our listeners that they should go to olivermsa.com, olivermsa.com, to catch up with what Michael's doing and to take advantage of the products that he provides there. Michael, earlier this month, you sent out a price and momentum chart that really captured my attention. It showed 3 points in time when your momentum charts were turning you positive towards gold. And what really stands out in my mind is a distinct breakout on the last one that you sent, the last point of entry. You're suggesting to people that they sort of layer themselves into the gold market on the long side. But the last one that you sent out, a couple of weeks ago, it really showed a distinct breakthrough in momentum. And even though at this point in time, from a price chart perspective, gold still has not penetrated through about $1,350 level that is sort of held to be key. So talk to us a little bit about those three areas, and how confident are you, Michael, that anytime soon we might break through that $1,350 level?
Gee, I'm pretty confident. I'd say very. The momentum usually leads price breakouts, both the tops and bottoms. And we had our major first buy signal for gold was in, first off, we got bearish in 2012, big time, early 2012, mm-hmm. Between 1650 and 1700. So we're two-sided on gold. I do fundamentally like it. I see its reason for being, and I have I think it's vast bull market ahead of it. It's going to be the biggest of all we've ever seen. But we are flexible. So, for instance, we were bearish from 2012 through 2016. In February 2016, mm-hmm. gold came up through 1140. In February of 2016, about $90 off its bear low, and we broke our annual momentum out. Now, if you look at a price chart at that point in time, there was nothing particularly important going on, but of course, gold gushed, went up $200 more, 1370s. Mm-hmm. Now, since then, gold has entered what we consider just a massive price base. It's not gone back to its bear low. The closest it came was in late 2016, but it didn't get there. And then last summer, it went down to 1161, which was sort of in the middle of this big clump of ink that goes back to late 2015 and spans the 4 or 5 years. But if you look at a price chart of gold, which is what everybody does, I suggest your listeners go Google up a chart on weekly or monthly of gold. At least go back to 2013 so you can see the crash from the 1700s, 1800s and then down into the 1100s. But since 2014, gold has rallied repeatedly every year above 1350 at a slightly descending line across every year's highs for the last 5 years, 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18. It probably declines about 0.5% a year, so it's almost flat, this line.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody can see it.
Yeah.
When we dropped to the 1160 low last summer, last August, it was when the S&P was making its high, by the way, August, September, gold was making a low, and gold came up out of there quietly, firmly but quietly. There was no excitement, no bells ringing, no particular chart points on the price charts anyway, but we had a multiple layer of buy signals or breakout levels that you could clearly see on a momentum chart. So you look at price, you didn't see anything breaking out above, but on momentum you had very clear structures.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't have to be a professional. You just had to see the chart. And each of those signals, one of them was above 1,200 in October, above 1,240 later that month, and above 1,280 in December. So we had three buy signals, average price 1,240.
Mm-hmm.
We have no more momentum buy signals. We're fully positive. Now what you have is what everybody can see, the price chart. And that trend line comes through roughly around 1,350, give or take, and everybody can see it. Well, we went up last week to a high. It was 1345, I believe, was the top tick on the spot gold contract. So it got very close to the line, and they took it down real hard for 2 days. Now, we stopped going down. That was Wednesday, Thursday. We stopped going down on Friday, again yesterday, and again today. It's no longer going down. So the sell-off was real rapid, but it was only 1% or so.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately, the buyers came in again. And this is the tone of gold for the last 6, 7, 8 months. It can't get a sharp break. You can back it up 1% or so, but every time you think you've got it going on the downside, something stops it. Firm bidding. Somebody's moving into gold. I don't mean somebody, but a lot of people, okay? And I think they see asset class shift underway, and they're moving into gold. And even the S&P rally, which we would think would discourage the gold rally, didn't. Nor did firmness in the dollar index stop gold from having this rally. By the way, the dollar index now looks like it's ready to roll over and help assist gold. I think that the last run-up we had last week to approach that line that goes back 5 years was the last time you're going to approach that line. In other words, we're going through the line. And that selling that we got last week, I think, is sort of your last-ditch sellers. And my comment to them would be this. We shouldn't have come back up here, guys. When you had gold broken down to 1160, if you're bearish, and I hit a lot of people, hedge fund managers, and people sending me emails and so forth, say gold's going to make new lows, take out 1,000, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah,
and we
sure.
politely said, no, we don't think so. We have other reasons to assume it's going up. That, I think, that type of selling against that line that's been hit so many times is what I would call idiot selling. I mean, when you get a line that obvious on a price chart that goes back that far, and it's been used so many times as a point of selling, don't count on it holding me back forever. We should not have come back up to that line. That indicates to me that even price has intent to go through.
Right.
And I think it's going to happen late this month or in March. We'll go through that line. And when we do, I expect a gusher.
What would be your price target then, Michael? What's on the upside then once we get through that 1350?
I'll give you a couple numbers. I think, first off, we're going to 1700 on this particular move. I think you might find a breather in between, like in the low 1500s. But I think once you clear that 1350-60 stuff, and the public wakes up and fund managers wake up and so forth, there's going to be so little selling on the other side of that line for quite a bit that it could gush. It could have a reverse of what it did in 2013, which is to say it crashed. Gold went from the 1700s down to the 1100s in a matter of a handful of months, in fact, about 3 months. I'd expect the reverse of that on the upside. Now,
Michael,
you're going to stop at 1700, by the way, but that's just
Your first major target.
Yeah, the first major target's that level, with a stop halfway between the breakout level and 1700, so something like the low 1500s. So.
Michael, with 30 seconds, in your 360 weekend report, you said gold is not waiting. What did you mean?
Waiting for the fundamentals that justify it. In other words, people think you need to have consumer price inflation or something to justify a gold move, or you have to have a collapsing dollar to justify a gold move. Well, none of those things have been happening, yet gold's moving. It's not waiting on it. It knows what's happening and what's going to happen. It's anticipating, and it's anticipating correctly, in my view. So the events you wanted to have to justify gold to get here, you're going to get them, but you're going to get them and it's too late.
All right.
It'll be in the 1400s. Okay.
All right. Okay, very good, Michael. We'll have to leave it go at that. Thank you so much sharing your wisdom on the gold markets in particular. We didn't have time to get to the others, but perhaps next week. Thank you so much for being with us. So, folks, don't go away. We got to go to commercial break. But Chris Taylor, the president and CEO of Great Bear Resources, one of the most exciting junior exploration companies out there, he'll be with me right after the break, so don't go away.
Noble Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Karratha region of Western Australia, where they are currently drilling and trenching their Perdies Reward Project. In addition, Noble has partnered with Sumitomo Mining Corporation to advance its Beaton's Creek Gold Project toward production. With over $70 million in cash and strong shareholder support from the likes of Kirkland Lake Gold, Noble is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.
Great Bear Resources, trading under GBR on the TSX and GTBDF on the OTCQB, is a gold exploration company focused on their wholly owned Dixie project in the prolific Red Lake mining district of Ontario, Canada. Recent drill results yielded an impressive 1,600 grams per ton gold over 0.7 meters near surface. GBR is fully funded to drill 300 plus holes this year. McEwen Mining is a significant shareholder following a $5.7 million investment as part of a recent $10 million financing. Visit greatbearresources.ca.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again Chris Taylor. He's the president and CEO of Great Bear Resources. Chris is a structural geologist and a fairly young man who's having a lot of success early in his career, and we're just really excited to have him with us again to talk about Great Bear Resources, which is a sponsor of this show. It's also a company that I have recommended to my subscribers and also own shares myself, which I've purchased off the market because I find this such an exciting story. Great Bear trades in Toronto under the symbol GBR. You can buy it in the U.S., as I have, under the symbol GTBDF. 36.2 million shares outstanding. Earlier today, when I checked, it was selling at around $2.75 in U.S. money, giving it a market cap of a little under, just a whisker under $100 million in U.S. funds. So, Chris, thanks for joining me again.
Thanks very much, Jay. It's great to be on the show again.
It's great to have you, and I guess you're at the BMO conference, as it's called, in Florida. How are things down there at the conference?
Well, I have to tell you, it's some of the most exciting presentations I saw back-to-back yesterday morning when it was Newmont and then Barrick all speaking to each other. We didn't see any actual fisticuffs occur, but it could have come to that point.
Yeah, I would think so. A hostile move on Barrick's part to try to grab Newmont. I honestly hope it doesn't happen because companies that are exploring and developing projects, I like to see as many potential suitors out there for those smaller companies as possible. But in any event, you have a very exciting story. Now, I received an email from Dr. John Mark Stoudy, who I'm sure you probably know. He's an exploration geologist as well. He sent me a comment and a question that he thought I should pass on to you. John Mark stated, and this would be directed to you, Chris, he said, excellent work by you and Bob Singh on the structural geology and the hinge zone. Why do you think that you found this when others had not? And in the coming 2 years, where do you see the company progressing? If you want to take the first question first, and maybe we can get into where you see the longer term over the next 2 years where the company's going. But Why were you able to find this? You know, one of the things that really impressed me, Chris, and why I got excited about your story early on, and when Gwen Preston introduced you up at the Metals Investor Forum in Vancouver last year sometime, I believe it was, early in the year perhaps, was that almost every drill hole you put down, if not every drill hole, was hitting mineralization, hitting the structure that you intended to hit. So I guess I would like to just, again, pass along the question, what do you think, why do you think you were able to find this this structure, this rich gold-bearing structure, and others were not?
Well, that's a great question. I guess it's really what did we do differently, and then we can go into the metrics long-term. So effectively, when we took on the project, we benefited from having over 150 drill holes in it already. So that was over... you know, over a couple kilometers of area, and a lot of it concentrated in one place. Now, you know, the technology changes over time, right? So back in the early days when this was discovered in the 1980s, the thing that makes our project sort of stand apart from some of the other major gold discoveries in that Red Lake district, it is one of the best mining districts in Canada, but our project doesn't have a lot of bedrock exposure. There's a few feet to sometimes a couple tens of feet of sand and gravel that covers the bedrock. So you just don't see it on surface. You can walk around there all day and you'll see trees, or where there used to be trees, it's all been logged. And you won't really see much in the way of bedrock geology. So people were effectively drilling off of geophysics in a really magnetic group of rocks. And what that means is that a lot of the historical drill holes were just sort of in the wrong place. And when we took on the project, we could see that out of those 150 holes, the majority of them had gold in them, which is really unusual over such a big area. But because there was mistakes in where the holes were supposed to be, it didn't look like it had sort of the excellent continuity and the high-grade gold continuity that we see now. So basically, we fixed up old data, we used modern technology, and we used our experience with structural geology, geochemistry, and some of the crew that we have who are, they've been working in the Red Lake area for a long time, to be able to predict where these high-grade zones would be. And lo and behold, drilling off of that reinterpretation, we were and continue to be very successful.
Yeah, you just, I mean, it's just amazingly, almost every, as I say, almost every drill hole that you put down hit gold mineralization. It's just the last time I heard of such consistency was with Briex, and I said, I don't think this is a Briex, thankfully. It's not. Now, Chris, your grades have been phenomenal. I mean, this is what's got me and everybody so excited. For example, you have had insane grades like 50 ounces per ton over smaller intersections, and that has brought a lot of attention to your stock. But what really matters from an economic perspective is consistency and continuity of grade over sizable structures. Can you comment on that issue and perhaps also give us an idea of the true widths of the gold-hosted structures that you're encountering?
For sure, Jay. What we're seeing is effectively some of the main types of structural geology that control where the big mines in the area are located. Those big structures we also see on our project. So when we got involved, that was not generally known, that we had these big structural features, these big folds and these big faults that are so important to basically provide the interpreted plumbing for what brings the gold from deep in the crust and puts it where we're seeing it today, right near the surface. So we began to find that we had these big features, and we began to think big. You know, when you take on a project, you're often very conservative when you start doing the work, because obviously, you know, when you, you know, sort of put a new company together, you want to make sure that you're growing investor value and you're being careful about it. And, you know, it's like growing a child in very many ways. So we began stepping out and consistently hitting gold, reinterpreting, and then we began to think, what if this project is more like, say, like Big Mine that Goldcorp operates in the district? So effectively, when we switched over our thinking, we began to see that there was large-scale potential, and we began to drill along some of the primary structural trends. And one of those trends is one of the largest deep-seated fault systems in the district. There are basically two of them. One of them looks like it lines up most of the major mines that are in the Red Lake camp, which for those of your listeners that are not terribly familiar with Red Lake, that would be a global resource of over 50 million ounces, 50 million ounces of gold in known resource, and over 30 million ounces of gold produced. So we began to see that we had these sort of big structural features, and that really explained, because there's only two locations in the district where they're present, why you get so much gold in our project. And that means that it has big scale potential, but also the structural potential for a lot of on-strike continuity. And that's really the explanation for why we keep hitting the gold consistently, is because the area has been very well provided with structural controls and gold-bearing fluids.
Mm-hmm. Chris, I saw in your February 21st news release that you just put out, you noted a 42-meter width wide zone with multiple gold-bearing intercepts, including a 31.6 grams over 3.4 meters. And in that press release, there was also reference to a south limb zone that is continuous with the hinge zone. Is the merger of those two zones what accounts for this? I think this is wider than anything you've seen so far, I think. Am I right about that?
That's correct. Those are mostly nomenclature, so effectively it looks like one big gold-bearing vein system of multiple veins sort of, you know, either coming together or going apart. And the term we use in geology is anastomosing, and effectively that's a technical term for wiggling. So they wiggle their way along a trend, and sometimes mm-hmm. they're wider, sometimes they're narrower, sometimes there's one of them, and sometimes, like in that news release, there's four of them stacked up together. And that really is, for the Red Lake District especially, most of the mining, even if you think about Goldcorp and the main Red Lake gold mine, most of the mining and most of the gold zones that they've mined are between half a meter, 0.5 meters, and 2 meters in width. If you read their technical report, which is on their website, that's the information that they provide in the technical report. So when we begin to see veins that are much larger than that, and vein zones that are up to 40 meters wide, which is 130-odd feet wide, I mean, it shows you the potential scale of what we're dealing with here, and certainly that it's a big, robust gold system.
Chris, also, I believe when Goldcorp first started encountering those really high grades, they were at considerable depth compared to where you're finding gold. Am I right about that?
Absolutely, Jay. I mean, some of that drilling that they did, some of those discoveries are over 1 mile vertically down in the earth, and that really adds to the operational costs that they have to endure when they're mining it. Yeah, regardless, there was a period of about a decade from the early 2000s to about 2014 where even down at those depths, because of the high Red Lake-style grades, the main Red Lake gold mine was probably the most profitable gold mining operation on the planet, even at those depths. But the difference is, with our discovery, is that it basically goes right to surface. So we've been drilling gold off. We know some of the historic areas were even trenched with an excavator. They had high grades going right to surface. So where we're drilling now, from about 0 meters depth to about 300 meters depth, we keep consistently hitting these high-grade bearing quartz vein systems, and that's really exciting because it takes that discovery potential and brings it right up to surface where, you know, I'd say potentially that would be very good for the project over the long term, economically.
Absolutely. Well, can you give us an idea of what the footprint is so far? What I noticed back in June, you added a little over 2,000 hectares onto your Dixie project. Obviously, you must be seeing something or believing that the current existing structures might extend further. But can you give us an idea of what is the area, the surface area that you've drilled on so far, and how much bigger is the target that you're looking at from surface?
Well, we've drilled across about 2.5 kilometers of strike length so far, and that's been really remarkable because we've hit gold in every hole. I mean, not every hole is what we'd call a screamer. Some of them are quite, some of them are very, very well mineralized, and some of them go down to, you know, a meter of a gram and then up to many meters of many ounces. But, 2.5 kilometers drilled strike length on a gold system, it's big. And that parallels that big structural feature that I was telling you about. That big structure on the project is probably about 20 kilometers long. So, while we've had a really good success rate and we found new zones, our project, that Dixie property, is about 10,000 hectares, so about 23 kilometers long by, well, it varies in width, but several kilometers wide, and there are multiple targets on it. So it's a combination of effectively drilling more of the high-grade gold on the zones you've already found and stepping out and testing new areas that have the same kind of structural controls and look like good potential hosts for mineralization. And some of those early step-outs that we did, they were hitting nice gold way out, you know, 2.5 kilometers away. So, you know, very exciting the way it's coming together.
Boy, you, absolutely is exciting. I see in your press release you talked about a 30,000-meter drill program that is to last through, I guess, through this year and maybe into 2020. What will be the objective of that? And do you foresee any, are you planning anytime soon a resource?
Effectively, that program would be, it's probably about a $5 million Canadian budget that we have for that. And as you know, Jay, I mean, we currently have about $15 million in our treasury and a bunch of warrants that are owned by Rob McEwen and management largely that could bring in another $8 million or so. They're all in the money. So, you know, collectively in Canadian dollar terms, that's about $15 million to about $22 million that we have available. So you can see, you know, we'd be able to expand that drill program that we've announced pretty, well, very substantially by multiples without having to go back to the market for more financings. So what we'd like to do with that drilling is effectively twofold. One of them will be testing these new targets across the project. So that's exploration, like pure exploration. And we've had some very nice early successes with that. The other one is effectively definition type drilling and extension along strike and down dip on the zones that we've already found. So that will in future generate a resource. Are we at the resource point yet? No, but we are putting together mineralized volumes of rock very quickly with the hit rate that we have and the consistency that we're seeing. It's been very attractive what's coming into the ground so far. I can get into that in a little bit more detail if you want to hear some of those statistics too.
Yeah, it's. I mean, there's a sense that this system could go to great depth, I'm sure, but your focus at this point in time is just laterally pretty much, right? To, what, 300 meters or so you say you're drilling to?
Yeah, we've drilled down to about 300 meters in depth, but we know the other local gold mines, the other gold deposits, there's gold down to many kilometers as drilled to date along some of these major structures and major controls. Red Lake is very well known for having great vertical extent, so we would anticipate, and, you know, obviously you need to prove it with drilling, but we would anticipate based on the similarities that we are seeing that we have great depth extent as well. But yeah, in the short term, in order to figure out how big the system is that we're drilling and how many zones there are, it's shallower drilling initially until we get a handle on that. Right now, the more we step out and the more we drill new areas, the more gold zones we've been finding. So that's a process we'd like to see continue as well.
I can't imagine. You're down at the BMO conference. I can't imagine that there's not a lot of very interested companies down there talking to you, interested in knowing more and probably picking your brain in very technical terms, trying to understand as best they can what this this freak of nature, it seems almost, is all about. But let me just ask you then, getting back to John Mark Stoudy's question, where do you see the company going over the next 2 years?
Well, it's a very good question. You know, one of the things we will be doing is constructing a resource, and the drilling that we're putting together is effectively doing that. The more zones we find, the longer it takes to put it together, which is obviously a very nice problem to have. But that will come over the next couple of years once more drilling has been completed. In the meantime, because it's such a new discovery and it's a new company from the public awareness perspective, we'd like to get the word out, like for people to be aware of what Great Bear is, where we're working, and what the Dixie Project is that we're working on. So there's a lot of introductions that have to be made. Word has to be gotten out. And in particular, we've had you know, quite a bit of interest from you know, various large mining type sort of corporate people, and you know, obviously people that do make large investments in mining companies. So these are discussions that we're beginning to have, and it's nice to see the awareness of the company and the potential of the project and the company get distributed a lot more widely. That's a big changeover from when it was just me and Bob Sink and our board members, and we were working on the first, say, 10-drill full program about a year and a half ago.
Okay. This is just almost a freak of nature, it seems to me, Chris, that what you have here. Would like to ask you, you have another project, the West Madsen Gold Project, that you know, is in the same area. That project also seems to have some potential, but obviously you have your hands full with Dixie. Do you have any plans for West Madsen?
That's a great question. I mean, we picked up the West Madsen project because it's right adjacent to Pure Gold Mining. They recently came out with a feasibility study on the first sort of million ounces of high-grade gold that they've defined there. So, I mean, I think it's a strong study, and I think it's of interest to people. So what we did was stake up the on-strike extension of some of these structures that we can see or we interpret through the geophysical data that we have collected over the project and that is publicly available on their property. So we basically staked the West Madsen projects to control the on-strike extent of those gold-bearing structures that they're working on. And they're drilling, Pure Gold is drilling about a kilometer and a half from our claim boundary. So it's quite close on what they call their wedge zone. So our plans for Madsen, we'd like to see how it goes with Pure Gold. We hope they're successful and manage to either place it into production, expand the resources, or attract a corporate partner of some kind. So mm-hmm. If that occurs, it's advantageous for us to have the ground that's immediately adjacent to it that potentially could extend what they're working on. So there won't be any near-term drilling by us on West Madsen. As long as there's active work going on by Pure Gold on Madsen, I think that's probably the cheapest exploration that Great Bear can conduct,
yeah.
To be a bit cheeky about it. And we're focusing our attention quite precisely on the Dixie property because of all the gold that we're finding there.
My goodness, I guess so. You'd be foolish not to, but to also have an asset like West Madsen is also a very positive thing, I think. Well, I want to thank you very much, Chris, for being with us. Very exciting story. I hope we can have you back in another few months or so to discuss your latest discoveries. It's fantastic. Thank you so much for being with us. Folks, we do have to go to break now, but don't go away. Dr. Quentin Henning of Novo Resources will be with me to talk about that very exciting story, the unique Witwaters Rand-like deposit that they are working on in Western Australia. So don't go away. I'll be right back with Dr. Quentin Henning.
Triumph Gold holds a 100% interest in the district-scale Free Gold Mountain gold-copper project in Yukon, with a government-maintained road accessing their 200-square-kilometer property. The 2018 drill program has resulted in exciting discoveries to date, hitting the richest intersection ever in a porphyry system in Yukon. The company is well-funded and has a large institutional holding, including Goldcorp and Zijin Mining. Triumph trades on the TSX Venture under the symbol TIG and the OTC markets TIGCF. The website is triumphgoldcorp.com. Uranium Energy Corp, NYSE, American UEC, is America's emerging uranium producer. The company is 100% unhedged and has fully permitted and licensed processing plant and production-ready uranium assets in South Texas and Wyoming. With a rising uranium spot price, UEC is positioned to lead and supply to the U.S. uranium requirements ahead. Visit UraniumEnergy.com and on Twitter at Uranium Energy.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have Dr. Quentin Henning with me once again to give us an update on the extraordinary gold discovery taking place in the Pilbara Basin of Western Australia. Quentin, of course, is heading up Novo Resources. We've had them on the show a number of times in the past. They are a sponsor to the show. And actually one of my top holdings, a company that I have been extremely excited about, watching the developments take place. As we discussed with Dr. Henning several times on this show in the past, it was his out-of-the-box thinking in terms of how the Great Witwaters Rand gold deposit in South Africa was formed that took him to Western Australia in an effort to discover another great gold deposit of similar origin. For investors who may not know, something like 35 or 40% of all the gold ever mined in history has come out of the Witwaters Rand in South Africa. And Dr. Henning defied conventional wisdom among his geologist peers, and lo and behold, he has discovered an exceptionally large conglomerate gold system, perhaps somewhat akin, not exactly like, but somewhat akin to the Great Witwaters Rand deposit. Of course, this is a story that's in its infancy. It's unfolding as we speak. While the share price of Novo has fallen from its 2017 peak, as the sensationalism of the discovery has given way to the hard work of learning how to sample and mine a gold deposit that is far different than anything else encountered, Dr. Henning and his team are moving forward on several fronts. Investors need to be aware of what Dr. Henning and Novo Resources are up to if they wish to participate in what I think is potentially a very enormous gold discovery and one that may make people wealthy. At least that's what our hope is. And this is all taking place now. So I'm really pleased to have Dr. Henning with me. Again, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Jay.
Several years ago, you started your work in Australia on a project known as Beaton's Creek, and then came the spectacular disclosure of a field of large nuggets in conglomerate rock some, 100 or so kilometers to the west of your Beaton's Creek project. That is known now, that project, one of those projects anyway, is Comet Well, your primary focus there. It was your alert involvement in that discovery that caused your stock to take off like a rocket in 2017. More recently, you also picked up some ground in an area a bit to the east of Comet, well known as Egina. But you were also, once again, very active, moving back to Beaton's Creek. So which of these projects would you say are your major focus right now? And then perhaps, Quentin, take a few minutes to describe what you're doing with each of those three areas.
Yeah, you know, Jay, I'd really encourage people to think of what we're doing here in a holistic way, because really this is all one big gold system. It's just like you said, it's a basin-wide system. These different occurrences that we're working on are all part of that basin, and they're simply separated by space. There's actually many, many prospects and other known gold occurrences here and there in areas between and around these main areas of focus for us. But right now we've got really three levels. I'd encourage people to think of three levels of exploration going on. Beaton's Creek, as you said, was where we started. We picked up Beaton's Creek. It was a historic mining center. There were known conglomerates. A lot of people here in Australia, I think, viewed them as challenging. They were known to be nuggety. They were viewed as erratic and so forth. But we've come in. We did some, innovative geology and sampling and so forth over the next few years. And we managed to put a resource together. I think 2015 we had a resource on the order of 550 or 600,000 ounces at that point. Anyway, to fast forward, we like you said, moved over to Comet Well. That's obviously a big focus for us now. But we also learned a lot on the way. So when we went to Comet Well, we started taking some even more innovative sampling approaches, bulk samples and so forth. We also undertook considerable diamond drilling to evaluate geology. And as we did this, we realized that we could probably apply some of the same principles that we were using at Comet Well to Beaton's Creek. So we did a program late last year where we went back to Beaton's Creek, and we felt we could enhance the resource dramatically by doing some bulk sample work as well as diamond drilling and really reevaluating some of the RC drilling, that reverse circulation drilling that we did a few years ago. We dropped cameras down the RC holes These cameras, you know, could take pictures or images off the walls of the holes. And we then learned a lot more about the geology. In essence, we were able to draw a brand new model, like a wireframe model, of the conglomerate beds. We were able to connect the dots from hole to hole to hole across the entire, you know, upper part of the basin system there at Beaton's Creek. And we have now remarkably developed a very high confidence around the model. And we're, you know, imminently, say in the next 4 to 6 weeks, going to issue a new resource based on this work. It's, you know, as I see it, it's remarkable. We've used an iterative approach to exploration. We've come back to Beaton's Creek, applied what we've learned, and I think we'll truly put a new resource out there that's going to make people sit up and take note of these deposits.
Yeah, I noticed in your press release that just came out this past week, you talked about those bulk samples that you took at Beaton's Creek. And I think it's some 45 bulk samples, and you have another 20 to go or something like that. But the weighted mean average was 2.55 grams of gold per ton, which is pretty similar to the average grades that you were picking up, I think, before what you had in your 43-101 resource. But do you feel that you maybe are now getting a pretty good handle on the distribution of gold at Beaton's Creek?
We do. These give us a lot of confidence to see, you know, a lot of samples. Like you said, 45 samples generate a weighted mean average of 2.55 grams. And that effectively confirms what was data that we've collected in the past, but of lesser quality. Okay, so this really gives us a high assurance. But what's really neat now, Jay, is that we can take, you know, mathematically and in the computer, we can take a lot of that grade and then distribute it through this new wireframe model in ways that we couldn't previously. So now we're looking at expanding the resource at Beaton's Creek, hopefully dramatically.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, you had an image with your, you had some, you know, some illustrations in your press release that showed the updated wireframe model, and it looked to me like it's vastly larger and more continuous.
That's correct. Yes, it is. It is a shallow deposit. What's really intriguing about Beaton's Creek is that it's, you know, most of it's within a few meters or a few tens of meters of surface. It's basically, think of it like flat coal seams or something like this. You know, you can mine this quite easily. The gold tends to be free milling. It, you know, it's not bound up in other minerals like sulfides and stuff. It's a very, very ideal deposit. I think this is going to turn out to be one of the highest quality open pitable deposits in Australia.
Pretty darn good average grade to start with, but all those other factors that we've talked about before, the ease of metallurgy and so forth, could be a pretty high margin project, I would think. And do you have any idea when you might come out with some economic studies on this project, Quentin?
Yeah, look, we're going to put this resource together and then look at different economic scenarios that we might apply to it. Some of the work we're doing right now does include metallurgy, and particularly on the fresher rock material. And once we get that, I think we can start to put economic models together, you know, say at a preliminary economic evaluation level, something like that.
Okay, so right now that seems to be your main focus at this moment is Beaton's Creek. Is that correct in saying that?
It is, but it's not because we're you know, neglecting the other properties. It is hot up here. It's the hot part of the summer. So it's also wet in during this time of year. It's been raining in Edina, for example. So it's not an ideal place to work in a remote setting at this time of year. So we're taking a break from some of the field work, but we are gearing up the work at Edina where we left off with the bulk sampling late last year. We're very switched on to expanding what we know about Edina through additional bulk sampling this year. And, you know, we do have an allowance to move some dirt in there so we can do some you know, small test scale mining and things like that. It's a granted mining lease. I think what people should understand about Agena is that it's, although it's different than the conglomerate deposits because it's loose material, it's geologically, it's actually very similar. It's basically a gravel horizon that sits right at surface, easily dug with an excavator. And it's the erosional products of the conglomerates that surround the area. So as time went on, the conglomerates eroded away, and all of that gold that was locked up in them has been washed down onto the flats and constituted in this gravel horizon. So it's just an absolutely incredibly exciting deposit. And the thought that this thing could be yet another vast gold system as a, we'll call it a, an extension of the conglomerate story is really, really exciting.
So it's so this thing has some scale to it, Quentin?
Yes, Agena, look, we did work in what I would call a, you know, postage stamp area last year. It's the mining lease, which is, you know, it's still a few square kilometers, but the terrace itself, this target area, covers literally hundreds of square kilometers. We hold something like 950 square kilometers in the area. A lot of it is this terrace ground, but the terrace is a big, big target. You know, this is something for, you know, it's almost mind-boggling.
So, yes. So you have permits to do limited bulk sampling, I guess, at this stage, and do you need to make some arrangements with the natives to get larger scale permits in place, or what remains to be done there before you can look at this in a larger scale?
Yeah, that's a good question. So because we have the mining lease, we do have allowance to move some tons on that, I believe 50,000 tons this year, we can do some of that work that you mentioned. But, you know, we do have a vision towards moving this to a much larger scale, you know, say something on the order of a million plus ton test mine at some point. And to do that, we do have to work with the natives. You know, you always have a component of heritage clearance where you make sure that you're not going to disturb any known artifacts or sacred sites, things like this. And then ultimately, you also have to have commercial agreement with the natives. We are in those negotiations. We're working on that as well as environmental permitting. Because we believe that this system is there and that we're going to, you know, progress this thing to a trial mining phase. So in our view, we're taking this fast forward.
Okay, so Comet Well then, and back, how far away is Comet Well from Agena?
It's 130 kilometers to the west of Agena, so it gives you a sense of scale, you know, and we do know the conglomerates at Agena are effectively the same horizon of conglomerates that we see at Comet Well. So, you know, once again, the scale of these things is kind of mind-boggling.
That's incredible. And Beaton's Creek, further east yet, how far is Beaton's Creek from Agena to the east?
From Agena, it's southeast from Agena. It's about 180 kilometers. So, in effect, Comet Well and Beaton's Creek are about 300 kilometers, I think.
And do you say that the Beaton's Creek is part of the same system?
Yes, it's a little higher in the stratigraphy, but overall it's part of the same package of rock, absolutely. Oh,
that's just incredible. All right, well, Comet Well then, that's where all the excitement came in that area that drove your share price to the moon. Well, not exactly to the moon, drove it up dramatically higher and allowed you to raise some serious money in 2017. Where does that stand now? Because I know it's the extreme nugget issues there, and you're doing some experiments with sorting, which is very exciting, I think. New technologies, new computer power, and so forth that allows you to do things you never could have done in the past. But talk to us about Comet Well, and what are your plans this year for Comet Well?
Yes, so the sorting is actually a key component because that is potentially a way we can treat things both at a test level, you know, test scale like mine level, as well as a potentially a future commercial level. All right, so we are continuing the work on sorting. I believe the initial test results tell us it will work. We're looking at how we can introduce that at a test level. We're also targeting doing some test mining at Comet Well. as well as, you know, continue with the native title negotiations. We have a mineralization report we'll be filing shortly. All the important steps that I've talked about in the past around converting the exploration licenses to mining licenses so that we can get in there and do some aggressive test mining and ultimately, you know, get in and hopefully build a mine around that.
Can you give our listeners just a quick sense of why sorting is so essential, so important in terms of the potential economics of at Comet Well?
You know, Jay, it's remarkable. The coarse gold thing has been a pain, you know, painful exercise trying to quantify grade, but it's a blessing when it comes to processing. Okay, imagine crushing up rock. You know, you have a little bit of a nugget occasionally in rock, in these rocks. Well, imagine you put a ton of rock through a machine, and the machine picks out, you know, a precious few rocks, maybe, mm-hmm. you know, a kilogram of rock out of that ton mm-hmm. that has most of your gold in it. Imagine that. Okay, mm-hmm. think about that for a minute. It's just absolutely remarkable. This could change the not just Comet Well, but gold mining in general. I think mm-hmm. there's a lot of coarse gold deposits around the planet that could potentially be sorted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you avoid moving all that that waste rock around, and the cost, I guess, reducing the cost dramatically. Corporately, just in general, Quentin, how are you doing for money, and what is your burn rate? Because I know you're active, you're very active, and maybe now you're not out in the field and doing a lot of drilling and stuff now, but you're still, how are you set for cash going forward into 2019?
Sure. We have approximately $42 or $43 million at present. We have about $13 million in warrants that are due to exercise by, I believe, the 1st of May. Those are well within the money. We are generating some excitement. I think there'll be some a few events that trigger some liquidity and help process those. But most of those warrants are held by long-term shareholders who know what we're doing. They're very supportive. I would say that we are very fortunate. You know, the way I view it, we have effectively over $50 million in the bank to work with those warrants. And that's key. You know, moving these projects forward is going to take a bit of time and innovation, but we have the ability to do it and also the right people.
You also have some memorandum of understanding with Sumitomo, I believe. Would you care to talk about that just for a moment?
Sure. Look, Sumitomo is a very good partner. Japanese are generally good partners as a whole. They're very much aligned with the company. They like to come in, usually in a minority position, put money up, but they're aligned because they want to see production, okay? They're not around, you know, playing stock, or they're not, you know, trying to clip tickets and what all, you know, a lot of these financiers do. They're dedicated partners who will stick with you for the long term, mm-hmm. and that's what I love them.
And this memorandum of understanding means that they have the right to come in, I guess, if they want to finance development and so forth, right?
It says that we agree to work with them, you know, basically on a first rights basis to allow them to look at ways to finance our operation. Of course, you know, it has to be approved by our board as well. But
sure.
These are, you know, it's basically an agreement to agree to work together in a friendly way to advance these projects.
All right. Maybe just in wrapping up here, Quentin, can you give us a sense of what investors should really be watching for in the next few weeks and months?
Yeah, look, at Beaton's Creek, definitely look for that resource in a few weeks' time. Edina, look for the start of the work program, in a few weeks' time once the rainy season's done. Comet Well, we have the mineralization report and other items around sorting and how we're going to progress trial mining, things like that. So in the short term, look for all of those items.
Very good. Well, it's exciting for sure. You know, I know there's a lot of hard work, and mining is always a lot of science goes into what you're doing, obviously more than ever, because the easy gold to find on just laying on top of the ground is long gone, and now you got to find ways to get the mineral out of the ground. it's a fascinating story. Quentin, thank you so much for being with us, and hope to keep up with you into the future.
Thank you, Jay.
Well, folks, that is all the time we have for this week. Next week, I expect to have Alistair MacLeod with me to talk about the prospects of a gold-backed global monetary system, when, not if, the existing global monetary system breaks down. Bill Pincus, the president of Marimont Resources, will join me as well to talk about another project that Quentin Henning is involved with, actually. He's the chairman of Marimont, and that's the project is in Peru. It's a copper-gold project. Very exciting story. And Michael Oliver hopefully will be with us as well. Until next week, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Gold Mining Inc., ticker symbol GOLD on the TSX and GLDLF on the OTC, is the biggest bet for gold investors and legendary investors like Doug Casey, Rick Rule, and Marin Katusa, who put millions of dollars into backing the company, along with institutional investors. The insiders own over 20%. Gold Mining has strong cash and no debt. It's one of the top 1% of gold companies that has over 20 million ounces of gold resources. Visit goldmining.com.
Often referred to as one of the best teams in junior gold exploration, having discovered a 5 million ounce gold mine and sold a second company amidst discovery, the management behind Orin Resources now has a world-class exploration portfolio within Canada and Peru. Projects that give the company one of the largest direct pipelines for major discoveries globally, with one of the deepest technical teams to explore them. Entering into its third year of aggressive pursuit, Orin is expecting results from two of their major projects throughout the rest of this year. For the latest, head to orinresources.com and subscribe.